We are in chapter 15 at page 469, 470. The big words in the Hebrew, vehine, and in the English, it's the first paragraph on the right, on the left. Now, as regards to the totality, this is not, as we said in the introduction last time, this is not a tzedakah letter. This letter, the purpose of it is to explain in great detail the 10 spheres. Mm. The background of this letter and why the Alter Rebbe felt it necessary to write it, I have yet to determine. I haven't been able to find.
Okay.
What's the history?
What's the impetus
behind this? Is why he had to do this, because he did talk about it in brief in chapter 3, and what the 10 spheres were.
Right.
And this one, though, he goes into greater depth.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe that was the need for going to greater depth, knowing that it was eventually going to incorporate it in the Tanya later after his demise. So Vesach Nish, I'm not sure what the intention was.
Uh-huh.
So the 10 spheres, he says, we can understand by looking at ourselves. For my flesh I perceive godliness, that we are patterned after Hashem. Mm. And we have 10 attributes which correspond to the 10 spheres, which he mentioned this in again in chapter 3. Mm. And the Alter Rebbe went into a very long explanation of, take for example, Abraham. Abraham was the embodiment of kindness, and he displayed kindness, and everything he did was kindness, and he was the ultimate expression of kindness, and he was humble within kindness. And that was Abraham. Okay? We're going to let the Alter Rebbe do more explaining.
Yes.
So, Niklalus Yud Sphere Shnishmas Adam, Nayel Lekol B'derech Klal. So he says, of course, everybody knows what the 10 spheres are. You know, of course. You know, it's like being born with it, right? So.
Yeah.
Generally, the Midas Nechlakas B'derech Klal L'Zayin Midas. The emotions are divided into three. And the intellect, he's going to say later on, is divided into seven.
Oh, that's
and great. The intellect is divided into three.
Right.
Okay, v'kol prati amidish shuba'odam bo'is ma'achas mezayin midas elo. And every detail of a person's whole persona is really a composition of these seven. Shehen shorsh kol amidas klalusin. That they are, this refers to the general category of emotions. Shehem yidus hachasid lahashpiyah b'ligvul. That they are, what are the seven? You have kindness, which he spoke about the last two pages already about kindness. That kindness is give. Just to give as much as you could give and keep giving after you keep giving and give and give and give. That's kindness.
Right.
Then you have gvura. Midas HaGvura, L'tzamtzum L'hashpiyah Kol Kach, means to restrain, to contract, so there's not so much going out. Oh, Shaloy L'hashpiyah Klal, Kol Her Klal, or not to give anything at all. That's how you would define the attribute of G'vura, means to restrain, to withhold. As we know, the expression Ezehu Gibur is from Pirkei Avos, who's considered a strong person. Is a person Kavish Yitzro, is a person who can control himself,
yes.
Is hold himself back. That's called a strong person.
Yes.
And then you have Rachmanis. Mizara Rachmanis L'Rachmal Misha Shaykh Lashon Rachmanis Olav. Then you have Rachmanis to somebody who is relevant to have mercy upon that person. And we talked about this a zillion times, that Rachmanis is an intermediary between Chesed and Gevura. And it means to have some sort of an influence to give something to even a person that you wouldn't even think to have Rachmanis on them. Because he's not missing anything. The Ainshar Tsar Klal, he's got no pains. Okay? You have, for example, tzedakah. Tzedakah, you might say, could be as an expression of kindness. I'm giving, you know. It could be an expression of Rachmanis, this person needs, and therefore I have. But then, You have something called a loan. Okay, a loan is different. Gmilas Chasadim is also a mitzvah. To lend somebody money is a mitzvah.
True.
Okay, now this person could be wealthier than you. It would still be a mitzvah to lend the person money.
Yeah.
Because by doing so, he will pay back without interest, and then that's it. There's a mitzvah there. Okay? Let's say, so he's got a cash flow problem. Okay, so he's got a cash flow problem. There is a story. I don't remember the details. I don't remember which for sure was a Lubavitch or Rebbe. I think maybe the Rashab. That some chassid went to Lubavitch and he heard the Rebbe talking about Gemilas Chassadim, this idea of loans, and how it is that this is even better than giving tzedakah. So this guy took it upon himself that every day he would go find somebody to borrow money from and then pay him back like the next day or later that day, just so that person would have the mitzvah of lending money.
Without interest.
Yeah, he didn't really need the money.
Right.
But this guy needed to lend him money. That was his that was his mitzvah, his campaign.
Wow.
And it said that this, I don't remember the end of the story is that when he came back to Lubavitch, so he asked him what is his Seder, and it says the great illumination which is caused in the higher spheres because of this person's actions and drawing down so much rachmanis into the world because people are now lending money.
Wow.
Okay, which is also something. To get a person to give money is one thing. There's all kinds of seminars on how to get somebody to give money. Okay, you start out small, you start asking little thing, you build up to it, and then you work up for the major donation.
Right.
You can't just walk into somebody's office you don't know and say,
give
I need
$25 million.
I'm building a $25 million building, please write me a check.
Yeah.
It might happen. You could hope it happens, but it's generally, the nature is not that it's going to happen. Okay? But like this also, to get somebody to get used to the idea of lending somebody money, it's also, wait a minute, I'm going to lend you money, but then I don't have the money. And we know that, especially when you're talking about lending without interest, if you lend somebody money without interest, you're losing money. Because the money that you gave away to this person is going to give you back the same amount of money, so you're losing for inflation. And the money you could have taken, it, you could have invested it and made more money, and you're not making that money, you're just getting back exactly what you gave.
Yeah,
so by not making money, you're losing money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's something to it. So people might want to give a loan. Okay, so so that's what he says, that even if the Rahmanis is like the guy doesn't have any problems at all. So what do? You go and you ask him for a loan. Okay, Lefisha humidam umotzas nikris teferis. Because it's an intermediary between kindness and severity, it's called teferis, which means beauty. And we know, he said this before, k'moy big day teferis. When you talk about a beautiful garment, al derech mashu hu beged sevuya gavanim harbe. That it's got to be dyed in such a way with different colors that people look at it and say, wow, that's a really beautiful piece of clothing you're wearing. Okay, was it here that I mentioned it? I came across a Samach Tzedek about a month ago.
Said they had three colors?
Three colors.
Red, white, and black?
Red, white, and black, yes.
Red, white, and black, yeah.
Yeah, we couldn't figure out what, where, who. You know,
it was Cat the Hat.
Isn't that blue?
Yeah, he could be Jewish. No, he's red.
No, it's red, white, and blue with the Cat in the Hat. Sorry.
No, he's red, white, and black.
Is he black?
It's red.
Yeah, I think he's black.
White,
yeah.
And black, and red. Yeah.
Okay. But then you know what's red and white.
You're thinking of
you know it's black and white and red all over.
Right? Yeah, 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 yeah. I'm not sure we're going to go there yet.
No, we're not going there at all.
It was thing one that was the other colors.
Okay.
Thing two.
excuse me. B'derashu teferis v'noi. Masha en kein beged sefuya begaven echad lo shayach boi lashon teferis. You wouldn't use the word beautiful on a garment which is one color. You'd say nice. It's a nice shirt, you know. V'acharkach b'voy v'hashpol lidei maise d'hayne v'shas hashpoz mamish tzorech lihis yoitz eich l'hashpia b'derashu yachal l'mekabel l'kabel hashpo. Now, so what we have is we have three different emotions, three different ways which I'm going to relate to you. Either I'm going to just give it to you, either I'm not going to give you or give you less, or I'm going to give it in such a way that it is the best way for you. Okay, those are the three major attributes. The next three are not really emotions. Mm. They are purveyors of the emotion. How is the emotion going to be conveyed to another person? That's what, when I teach this and do the little tree thing that we have with the 10 spheres with the little segel thing, you know, the little dots with the sticks connecting to them. So I usually draw two lines. A line between Das and Chesed and Gevura, and a line between Teferis and Netzach and Hod. Mm. Because Netzach, Hod, and Yesod are there in order to get Chesed and Gevura and Teferis affected. That they should be able to be used. Mm-hmm. And he says that you need the advice. Shiachal mekabel lekabel hashpo. Okay? So you have to do something there. It has to be, you have to tailor the effect that you want to have on this other person in such a way that it'll benefit them the way that you would like them to be benefited from. Like, for example, you want to teach something. To your kid. Okay? I would assume, I would hope, that we're all smarter than our children, at least when they're little. Okay.
After that, it's only when we're really awake.
Yeah. Im yavarena lekula kamei shehi besichlai. If you want to try to explain, he doesn't say benaya katan, by the way. Mm-hmm. Okay, if it would be benaya katan, I'd say little kid, but he just says beno. Mm-hmm. So he's assuming that you're smarter than your children. So if you say it to it the way that you understand it, so lo yachal haben lahavin lekabel. Then the kid can't understand what you're talking about. Right. Because, it's just like we said before, you're only a teacher if the learner is learning. If the student isn't learning, then you're no teacher. Okay? So you have to put it in, you have to couch it in verbiage such that the kid will be able to relate to it. Rach sorach l'sader l'beseder v'inyan ech acher dover dibur al alfani ma'at ma'at b'chin is eitzezu nikra netzach v'hoid. So what you have to do over here is you have to set it up in such an order, and you have to do it in such a way that it's in different ways, and you do it a little bit at a time. And this type of advice, meaning how do you are advising your intellect, is called Netzach and Hod, which are translated as victory and glory. He doesn't translate them in this over here. Shehen Kloyas Yoitzis, which are referred to in the Zohar as the kidneys that advise. Hmm. Okay, and later on he's going to say that it refers to the testicles as a different example. So this is the what's the idea? What does Netzach do, and what does Hod do? You give an example that you're in a hurry. Okay, you have a goal. You have to be at a certain place at a certain time. You are late. Okay? You are sitting at a light. And there are 20 cars in front of you. And on every green, 5 cars go through. Okay? You're going to have to sit there for 4 lights.
You're talking about Southfield, right?
Yeah. Okay? So, now, on the right side is a lane. It's not a right turn only lane. Mm. You can get into the right lane, but there's one problem. There's parked cars on the other side of the intersection. So it would be normal for a person to be in the right lane making a right turn, mm-hmm. but there's nothing that indicates that that's the way it has to be. So you're in a hurry, so what do? You zip into the right lane, you zip past the 20 cars, okay? And you sit there, like the goose and the mongoose and the cobra, waiting for this Christmas tree thing to go, okay? Right. And victory says, Netzach says, as soon as that thing hits green, boom, you peel out. Right. Zing, and you zip in front of the guy. Okay? And you have now accomplished your goal of not being as late as you were if you would have sat there for 4 lights.
Right.
Okay? Now, so that's what Netzach says. Netzach says, charge! Now, there's one problem with that.
The guy on the left,
he sat there for 4 lights.
Right.
He sees you zip up, and you're going to cut in front of him. You're going to cut in front of me.
Yeah.
So what you've just done is you've stirred up his Midas HaNetzach.
Right.
Okay, so now you got Netzach versus Netzach over here. I'm going to win. No, I'm going to win.
Uh-huh.
Okay? This is confrontational. It says, but that's not your goal. Your goal is not to get into a confrontation with this guy. Your goal is to save time.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where Hod comes in. Hod could be translated rather than glory, which means nothing, as more as, say, like consistency or follow through. The relationship between Netzach and Hod is the same relationship as Chesed and Gevur. There are the lines that go vertical lines in the sphere chart. So when they're going vertical, they also connect from Chesed to Netzach and from Gevurah to Hod. Okay, there's a direct correlation in the way that they work.
They operate.
You might say it's sort of like the same thing like the periodic table. You know, if you were going down columns,
because there's a context.
So all of the
balances.
The elements in each column have similar properties.
Same valence too.
They're not exact. It's a big difference between calcium and phosphorus.
Right.
But they kind of act the same given the same conditions. Okay? So what happens with Netzach? Your goal, remember, is not to beat this guy. Your goal is to get there on time. So what do? You pull up right lane. Same thing. Okay? And you're waiting there. You zoom the engine a little bit. You give the guy the look like, you know, hey, I want to go. And then the light changes, and you hit the gas, and you let off the gas. Okay, what happens now? This guy peels out. So he went front. He's like gone. He's zooming, which is great, because you just now pick up number two. You became number two. You've just accomplished what you wanted to accomplish. You beat all those cars there. Either there's a guy in front of you, but look how fast he's going, because he wanted to beat you, which is fine. Okay, what have you done by doing it that way? You didn't smash into the car on the right that's parked. You didn't smash into him as you're trying to cut into the left. You didn't get smashed by somebody whose Midas HaNetzach is going across you, who's trying to beat the red. Okay, and you accomplished what you accomplished. That's what Hod does to Netzach. It says, you'll get what you get if, like my mother used to say, slow down, you'll get there quicker. Okay, that's why they're called Klaius Yoitzis. They give advice. What exactly, how your kidneys affect how you think and feel, I haven't seen much literature on. But they say, you know, the medieval medicine says that how you're feeling comes from your kidneys. You know, so who am I to say no? But so, what effect they have? Vesuchnesh, but that's what they're called. Vigahem train bayin hamivashlin hazer. He says he also gives the example. He also says elsewhere that Netzach and Hod are called the testicles that cook the seed or ripen the seed. Shehi hatipa hanim shechas mahamayach. That's the drop which is drawn down from the brain, as you may recall from chapter mm-hmm. 2.
Yep.
The example of our relationship to Hashem is similar to a relationship between a father and a son. That the essence of the father is the essence of the son. And how does that work? Is because the essence of the father's brain passes down through the spinal cord and is made ready in the testicles. And from there, that essence maintains its integrity, and that then becomes the essence of the child's brain. Okay, so the essence of the father's brain is the essence of the child's brain. Okay, but it has to go through a whole process, though. Okay, they may be working on it, but they haven't developed a procedure yet where they can just sort of like take in a syringe of your stuff and make it into a syringe of somebody else's stuff. You know, they're working on it, you know, but...
The kidneys now, they control your electrolytes.
Okay, what's that got to do with it?
How you feel. If you control your electrolytes, you can perform better. That's why the Gatorades, all that stuff, your kidneys do that for you. It has nothing to do with your, we think kidneys do. But if they didn't do that, you couldn't move as quickly, think as quickly.
I don't know. I'm not impressed because your spleen also does stuff.
Filters your blood.
Yeah, your spleen isn't put on the kidney. It's not put on the sphere chart. Neither is your liver. And your liver happens to be called one of the three kings in the Zohar. The three kings being the brain, the heart, and the liver. And we don't see any place that Netzach Hayim Yisoid are referred to as the liver.
Right.
So, but it is considered one of the three major organs in the body. So, I don't know where liver sticks on a, you know.
Liver does thousands of things.
Yeah. Anyway. That, for example, you have some sort of concept which comes from the intellect of the father, cannot be conveyed. Cannot be conveyed to the son in this very pristine, refined intellect that the father, how the father grasps it. Rak yishtena kitzas medakos sichlei. He has to make it a little bit more grub. That's not what he says. He says he has to make it less refined, but he has to make it a little more grub. Yishavas seichel she'ena dak kolkach kidei sheyachol haben lekabel demoichai ubinasei. So that the child's understanding that is not so refined should be able to grasp it. Meaning to say, he gives examples, also you have to put it into simpler language, you have to give physical examples that the kid could relate to, and if you're talking about somehow, you're talking about a cat, what a cat would do in this situation, so the kid will understand what something about elementary particle physics. Okay? Schrodinger gave the example of a cat, right? Yeah. Okay? Is it there or is it dead or is it not dead or both? Right.
It's because of the cats.
Probably. Okay. It says, like for example, the quintessential point of the father's brain, which is going to eventually wind up to be the son, as it's in the father's brain, it is very, very refined. It is some sort of neuroenzyme transmitter is what it is at that point. Okay? The nasis gases achumris mamish becloyus etrein bayin. But then, so what happens is it gets processed. It gets transferred down through the spinal cord, winds up down by the testes, and there it gets magushim. It becomes, this is the expression in Pirkei Avos, a fetid drop. This very fine, edel chemical that starts out in the father's brain comes out as to what it comes out as, you know, when it finally comes out. That I'm not going to say that again. So too also Netzach and Ahod are called, referred to, this is actually a Gemara terminology, they're called, Shechakim and Rechaim are two heavens of the seven. Rechaim means a mill and Shechakim is a millstone. Shesheichin man letzadikim, that they grind manna for the righteous. Okay, like for example, this idea. So what's going on over here is you have listed in Masechta Chagiga, you have what's going on in each of the seven heavens. It says that you say Shema, you have, when you say the word Echad, so you have Aleph refers to Hashem, and Ches refers to the seven heavens and the earth, and Dalet for refers to the four directions, and in all the four directions in the seven heavens and the earth up and down. So it's all one thing. So if you got seven heavens, so what are the seven heavens? So in Masechta Chagiga, the second Perek, I think it's Daf Tezayin, if I'm not mistaken. So it lists there what's in all the different heavens.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you have there, you have one level where the Malach Mechoyel is offering up the neshamas of the tzaddikim as karbonas on a mizbeach in Yerushalayim Shalmaila. Okay, that's one of them. And another one, you have Rechayim. That what's Rechayim? Rechayim is a mill. And a mill is, what's it milling? It's milling mon. For it says for the righteous. Does that mean that the righteous, if a person's a tzaddik, he's eating manna right now? I don't know. I'm not a tzaddik. I can't tell you. I don't know what they eat. Okay? I know generally that tzaddikim, people who are known tzaddikim, are generally not big eaters. So it could very well be that the reason why they're not big eaters is because they're full of mon already, you know. So maybe that's it. So it says now, about mon, and this idea of manna for the tzaddikim, for the righteous. Mm. It doesn't mean that they're actually eating the stuff. The stuff hasn't fallen from heaven since the day Moses passed away.
Right.
But rather, it says in Parshas B'Shalach, in the Parsha of the Mon, which we just recently read, so it says over there, Hamar b'lo yirba v'hamamit lo miamit. The person who collected more didn't get more, and the person who took less didn't get less. So you ask the question, why did the person who took more take more? What was his problem? And you might think, you could answer it, well, it's because he didn't think there's going to be anything tomorrow. But he was already told that it's going to get wormy and don't do it. You're going to take it, it'll be plenty. It'll be every day you're going to get.
Right.
So it says, who was the person who took more? Was Nachshon ben Aminadav. Moshe's nephew. Oh, huh? Moshe's nephew took too much? Why? Because when he heard that mon is what the Malachi Hasharis derive their nurture from, he said, how could I not take more?
Okay.
He was just so excited. Okay? Similar to the story of the Rebbe Rishab when he was 3 years old before Pesach. Mm-hmm. Remember such a story? Mm-hmm. The Tzemach Tzedek was already getting old. Mm-hmm. He wanted to help. His Rebbetzin had already passed away. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to help with Pesach.
Okay.
Okay? So Melo, okay, he's the Rebbe, first of all. You know, you're going to have him scrubbing pots. I mean, you're not going to have him scrubbing pots. Second of all, he's approaching 80 years old. Mm. So what are you going to have him do already? So they said, okay, Zeta gets to check all of the pockets of all of the little grandchildren. Mm. Says, Erev Pesach, you should check kids' pocket because kids put things in their pockets. Right. Okay, you should check out all the crumbs, etc., etc. So he comes to the Rashab, who at that time was 3 years old, and he finds a candy in his pocket.
Mm.
Okay, so he asks the kid, what's this candy? And he said, by his upshornish, which was Chaf Mar Cheshvan, which is like October, it is not Pesach time.
Right.
When he came to Cheder for the first time and he read Aleph Beis, so the Malach Mechoil threw him a candy.
Mm.
So the Tzemach Tzedek said, so why didn't you eat it? So he said, something that the Malach Mechoil gave me as a present I should eat. So he said, the grandfather said, Afal Pekin, before Pesach, you have to eat it up right now.
Mm.
Okay? And it's very interesting. The candy was most likely not hummus stick.
Why
it was most likely sugar with some kind of flavoring in it.
Right.
The Rebbe Rishab was, I wouldn't say militant, but he was definitely radical when it came to his use of sugar on Pesach.
Okay.
He did not use sugar on Pesach, full stop. He had a brother-in-law who was a sugar magnate, had the largest sugar concern in Russia. Okay, and it happened once that the brother-in-law brought special for the Rebbe a bag of sugar cubes to be used on Pesach, guaranteed 100% kosher for Pesach. And he presented it to his brother-in-law. The Rebbe Rishab put his hand into the bag, took out a cube, broke it open, and a wheat kernel fell out. Okay? Now, I'm thinking that this story probably wasn't natural, because I know in the processing of sugar, if you have anything else anywhere near the processing, It'll gum up the works. You're going to have big trouble.
Right.
There is no way. I used to do hashgacha on a sugar factory.
Right.
There is absolutely no way that processed sugar could be chametz.
Right.
Because if it is, it's not going to be processed sugar. Right. It's going to be licorice.
Yes. Molasses.
That's what it's going to turn into. Not even molasses. Yeah. It's going to be licorice.
Yeah.
If you get any type of stuff like that in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, the fact that this happened with this wheat kernel over there, it was just the rubber shop probably trying to show a point, like, you know,
yeah,
don't be such a chacham and try
and... by the way, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't use sugar on Pesach either, by the way. So, but anyway. So, So what is this manna from heaven business talking about being the food for the Malachim Asharis? Malachim don't eat.
Right.
Okay, we know from Avraham that he made them all kinds of stuff. He made them tongue with mustard. Yeah, and they sat there and they pretended to eat because, listen, when in Rome you have to do like the Romans.
Right,
if you're going to assume a human body, you got to act like a human.
Right.
But it said that what happened, they put it in the mouth and then some spark of God at least came and incinerated it. So it looked like they were eating. Okay? So what does it mean that the man, which is made for the neshamas? So the Alter Rebbe explains in a mimer and in Torah or in Parshas Vayakhel that the man comes from Chetzenius HaKesser as it's rooted in Pnimius HaKesser. It's an expression of Tainig, which is why the man tasted like whatever you wanted it to taste like. Except for the five things which were dangerous because, okay, those things might taste good, but they're not really going to bring you pleasure if they're going to harm your body. Okay, so the man, why is it that it did taste like anything is because it was directly rooted from divine pleasure. And it was this that the malachim, this hashpa, it's not a physical thing, but it was this derivation, this flow of divine delight that keeps the malachim going. And eventually it worked its way down through the creation process to something physical that fell on the ground in the midst of the dew and people ate it. That was a physical representation of it. But spiritually speaking, what is it? It's an expression of divine delight. Okay? So he says now, so it's the same thing also because, graphically speaking, what this person wants to do is he wants to have a son. And the son should be the same essential essence, the same essence as him. Okay? So what does Hashem do in order to get the essence of his brain to become the essence of his kid's brain?
Mm-hmm.
The act is engarbed, couched, I don't know what verb you would use to describe the relationship, in Tainuk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Hashem makes procreation just turn on a person's pleasure brain, its pleasure parts in his brain.
Mm.
Because that then stimulates the process whereby the essence of the father's brain is now sent down through the spinal cord, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to become the essence of the child, as he's going to say right here, right now. Have I lost you?
Mm.
Okay. Where am I? Like one who grinds wheat in a mill, for example. What does the mill do? Is it breaks the wheat kernel into very fine pieces. So too also the father has to diminuate, decrease the intellect, this concept, that he wants to convey to his son, he has to break it up into little shtikalach, lechalakim rambim, give him little bits of, take it from bites down to bits. He's got a terabit of information he wants to convey to his son. If he just kind of like plugs in the whole terabit, the kid's not going to get anywhere near. So what does he have to do? He has to break the bits into megabytes, make the bytes into bytes, into kilobytes, into bytes, into bits. So that gives them the information one bit at a time.
Correct. Yeah.
V'leimer le ma'at ma'at b'ma'etzis v'da'as v'gam b'chlal v'chines netzach hu l'netzach hu la'amid neged kol meneh ha'shpahat ha'limid b'menem v'vayisa b'chutz. And this, he's using his attribute of netzach to do this, which is very interesting. Okay, what is it? Because what is he doing? His goal is that he is going to convey this intellect to this kid. That's his goal. And so his midas hanetzach is going to prevent that from not happening. There is nothing going to get in his way. There's going to be no obstacle that he's going to overcome. The kid's going to sit there like a lunk and go, I've got a clue what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So what does he have to do now? He's got to come up with something else.
Yeah.
Okay? I'm going to get you to understand.
Right.
Okay? It's talked about in the Gemara. I don't remember which Tana it was. Who had a, tutored a kid.
Mm.
And the kid had a head like a brick.
400 times.
Yeah. Each lesson. Normal kid is 100 times.
Right.
This kid was 400 times.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he even got it after 400 times is also pretty amazing.
Mm.
So one time he tells the kid, let's hurry up, I got to learn, I got to get someplace. So after 400 times he taught it, the kid didn't get it because the kid is thinking, boy, oh boy, I get to stop early the whole time, 400 times through. What did he do? He said, okay, forget it, I'm not going anywhere. We're going to learn it again another 400 times. Because this was, he was not a teacher unless this kid was a learner.
Right.
And he was not going to go away with this kid not being a learner. So he had something else. Nope, it'll overcome his obstacle too. It says whether that impediment be internal or external. What's preventing a kid from learning? Could be a zillion things. You know, if the kid's not paying attention, not going to help. Okay,
right.
If there's noise going on around, also it's going to, you know, whatever it happens to be that the obstacle is going to be,
whatever distraction.
The teacher should be able to figure out how to get through and pass the distractions
right. So
as to achieve his goal.
Right.
That's the teacher using his midas hanetzach. So he says, mibayis external obstacles. V'hayalis chazik neged midas hagavura v'hatzimsum shiba'av atzmai. That means to say, to strengthen, to dominate over the attribute of restraint, which is in the Father himself. Shehu ma'eres dinim beretzayna al b'nai. That he's conjuring up all kinds of judgments about his son. Leimer she'ena roya l'kach adayin. To say, he's not old enough for this yet. Why is the kid not getting it? His brain's not developed enough. So he said that would be, that's like a Yetzihara from the father's part.
Mm-hmm.
So even that, so he's gonna, that would be, that's why he gives an example of mid-bias from outside, an external, not external to him, external to the kid.
Mm-hmm.
What's preventing him from conveying this information to the kid is he thinks the kid isn't relevant to understand, isn't shy, doesn't have any relevance to this information. So since he doesn't think about it, he's going to get it. So he's not going to get it anyway. So I'm not going to give it to him. That's netzach and hod. Then you had bechinis yisoid. Well, derech mashal, he's kashrus from his kasher ha'av sichlo b'sichel b'nei b'shatz l'muda yimoy ba'av v'ratzin. So yisoid is a connection. It's in the middle. All the spheres in the middle. Remember, we're talking about like a periodic table. All the spheres in the middle are really related more to connection than to an action. It's a coupling. Mm. It's true with Das. It's true with Teferis. It's true with Yesod. The purpose of that, and it's true with Malchus, which is also in the middle. The middle Kav. What's Yesod doing? Yesod is what takes the previous 8 spheres and makes it relevant to be put into practical use. Connects it to Malchus. Malchus is practical application. If you're calling Netzach the ability to overcome all acts, all obstacles, and you're calling Hod consistency or follow through. So Yesod would be called, not foundation because it doesn't mean anything, Yesod would be called the connection. Or you could call it preparedness. Also, being prepared. Okay? Example that I give for this one is an answering machine or voicemail.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, you have reached 248-555-5555. We're not here to take your call. Please leave a message after the tone. Thank you and have a great day. Yes. Nobody talks like that. But how come they're talking like that in their answering machine? The answer is because talking is a final result. Talking is, when do you talk? When you have information you want to convey to somebody else, you talk. And then there's this natural conversation that goes on because you're relating to this person. If there's nobody there, then your talk isn't natural anymore. If you're talking into a machine, then you're not talking to somebody. So it comes out like, hello, you have reached. Okay? So that when I'm doing my radio show, for example, it's very hard for me to do my monologue if the board op isn't sitting on the other side of the glass. If he like goes out when, you know, has to go do something and I just says, you know, how long is your monologue for? I say, oh, 7 minutes, okay, I'll be back in six. It is so hard.
Yeah, it's torture.
For me to make it sound natural. I have to pretend I'm talking to him sitting in the chair. When he's sitting in the chair, so I'm sitting and looking at him. Okay? He's never listening. He's doing stuff all day. He's running the board. Okay? He's listening to radio shows all day long. He doesn't care what they're saying. He's just watching monitors, numbers, these things, making sure the levels aren't too high, doing whatever else he's got to do. Okay? But I'm talking to him.
Right.
Okay? Because I have to, otherwise I'm going to start sounding like I'm talking into an answering machine. Okay? Ubalada ze gam im haya haben shemeya diburim elu atzman bepi avi. And even with all this, the kid is listening to the words of his father. Shemavadav ba'adav aloyma la'atzmai. Which is different than when the father is sitting talking to himself. Okay, we have this thing that you're supposed to articulate Torah by when you're sitting and learning. So you're sitting and learning by yourself, and you're learning the Gemara. And so the kid is sitting and listening. So, but the father's not teaching the kid. The father is sitting and learning. The kid has no clue what the father's talking about. Mm-hmm. Because he's not trying to explain it to the kid. He's trying to understand, the father's trying to understand it in the way that the father understands it. Okay? It's missing that connection. Mm-hmm. So the kid's not going to understand it so much. It says about Rebbe Meir was a student of Rebbe Akiva. Okay? I think this is who it was with. Or it was maybe with one of the students of Rebbe Meir. I think it was Rebbe Akiva. It was Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Akiva. Okay? Because he followed him to the Beis HaKisei. Mm-hmm. And the rule, you're not supposed to talk Torah in the Beis HaKisei. Okay? But if you can't control yourself, you're allowed to. You should have such a problem.
Yeah.
I can't stop myself from speaking Torah.
Right.
Okay? So now, Rebbe Meir, who is Stam Mishnas Ki Rebbe Meir, okay, the father of Nigla, you might say, is Rebbe Meir. He's listening to Rebbe Akiva as Rebbe Akiva is on automatic pilot in the bathroom. Because Rebbe Akiva was such a person that he couldn't control himself. Okay? But since it was that he wasn't talking to anybody, Rebbe Meir had absolutely no clue what Rebbe Akiva was talking about.
Wow.
Okay? Because he wasn't talking to him. It was just coming out. This was his yesod without any connection.
Yeah. Glowing.
Like it would be if the father was talking face to face with the son in expression of love, in order that the son should know it. However much more the father and the son are enjoying this conversation, that's how much greater the learning is going to be. Which is why it is, if you're teaching little kids, basically what you're doing is you're playing games with them. You have to make it fun for them, that right. They should be able to learn it so that they get it in their heads.
Right.
Shahaben Yachal Lekabel Yoser, that way the kid gets more. If the father is showing that he's enjoying doing it, and he gets the kid to enjoy it, so there's a meeting of the minds over there, and what is it based on? Tainug. It's the same thing, the same mushel of the essence of the son, father becoming the essence of the son through the two testicles, etc. Umezgadal sichlu baharchavas hadas lahashpiel liluma benay. And then there's a greater flow of intellect when he's learning with his kid. Gemal derech mashal begashmi is mamish. As he gives an example physically, okay, using procreation. That riboy hazera huma reva chashek vahatainik. If there's more enjoyment, there's going to be more production of seed. Simply speaking. Well, there's a mamshik harbe mahamayef, there's more drawn down from the brain. Vahim shila chachmasa emes leziva gashmi kamashi is bar. And that's why, whenever we have to talk about the relationship between, say, chachma and bina, or intellect and emotions, or emotions and action, we use the example of procreation. We even use it when we're talking about Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Shechina. We use this idea of zivug, of procreating. Okay, that from zivug chesaini, or yet malachim, which is called kissing. It's called in the Zohar.
Okay.
And from zivug panimi, so you get neshamas. Because there's more tainig involved, so you get a higher creature. Okay? So, the bottom line, so what did we discuss today? Is we've discussed, just in brief, Chesed, Gevurah, and Teferis. Not so much Chesed, because we did that last time. We talked a lot about Teferis. And we define what are Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. We got to the end of the parenthesis on page 474, which in the, where's that in the English? What is it? Is there an end parenthesis over there?
Yeah, there's as will be explained.
As will be explained, yeah. The end of the first paragraph of the to be continued next time on page 473, 474.
Wow, I'm looking for